Is this embarrassing? Yes. Is it awkward? Yes.
No, bitch, it wasn't awkward until you made it awkward by saying awkward.
Ladies and gentlemen,
awkward.
Social podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Awkwardly Social Podcast. My name is Jose Chavez. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. I am just sort of winding down my evening. So if this is the start of your day, congratulations. You made it another day. You can safely say that no matter what, as of right now, you've gotten to this point. And that was the hard part. At least that's how I see it. Especially in the morning. When I first wake up, I'm not the person who hits snooze three times. I started taking a real gamble. Once my alarm goes off, I just turn it off and hope that I don't fall into a deep, deep sleep where I end up, you know, suddenly I'm living in an adventure and I'm flying, and then I'm hanging out with my favorite band. And it probably takes me, I don't know, a good 45 minutes before I realize, oh shit, I fell asleep again. And then I wake up so startled. I wake up, there is almost always somebody, like a stagehand, who just walks into the room and says, hey, by the way, buddy, you're asleep. And then I wake up very startled. And that has been my morning routine now for about a month, and it is, so far it's not working the way it should be. I mean, I guess technically it is, but I don't know why I haven't modified my routine, like setting the alarm just a little bit later, going to sleep just a little bit sooner. I mean, I don't know. I start prepping for bed around 10:30, maybe 11, and somehow I still don't end up falling asleep until 2 a.m. God, that is such a big gap. I don't know what happens in between, but something about being like, okay, there's 5 minutes left on this Rick and Morty episode. Let me just get through this, and then I'm going to take a shower. Well, first I got to do a little laundry because I forgot to do it. And then I, you know, okay, am I locked? Is everything locked up? Okay, cool. All right, now, you know, oh, I forgot that I needed to scroll through Instagram for about half an hour. And then what was the name of that one actor who was in that movie? Was he in that other movie? And then I'm like, all right, cool. Now I'm going to go take a shower. And it's 1:30. You know, I'm like, son of a bitch. And I take a shower, get out. And then I have the hardest time falling asleep. I mean, there's enough reasons right now to be stressed out, to have a tough time with your sleeping habits. But this is something that goes on even when things are going okay. Things are never really truly awesome anywhere. You know, no, there's never a situation where everyone is in a good place at the same time. So when I say these things, I'm not being so broad as to dismiss the reality. But I'm talking about from my own personal, this is my good day, this is my good time right now. You know, I've very, very seldom have an issue lately, and yet I still can't help but stay awake and have a million thoughts going through my head. It's like, what's that program called? The Red Zone, where they're playing several football games all at once. I'm not an athletic person. Don't think that. I mean, I think I only know about this by accident, but it's like there's several programs playing at the same time. It's like I turned on 4 TVs, 2 radios, started playing a podcast on my phone, and then my neighbors started having a conversation both with me and then just around me. And all of this information is going on inside of my head. And then I remember the embarrassing things, the uncomfortable things, the things that I forgot to do, you know. And then the game plan that I tell myself for, okay, this is how early I'm going to go to sleep tonight, and I'm not going to let anything get in the way. Or this is how productive I'm going to be tomorrow, and I'm not going to allow myself to get sidetracked again. You know, it and those things, they happen. They're happening all the time, and it's very hard. So I am trying to work on a way to not get so lost. I think I bore myself a little bit because I'll zone out. I'll start making a point, and then in my head I start kind of doing this like this gesture, like come on, buddy, wrap it up, bring it home, bring it home. By the time I'm looking at myself, I'm like, wait, what? What are you trying to say to me? I realize, oh, I'm telling myself to wrap it up. I'm telling myself to move on to the next thing, and or get to my point. And then I by the time I get there, it seems like I had a great train of thought, and then it just kind of peters out. And that is what most of my existence has been, starting off with a really good point and then forgetting why I brought something up. But no, I'm pretty sure that's why I keep falling asleep so late, even with the best of intentions of going to sleep early. But I think there's almost always something I'm excited about. Getting some kind of message or, you know, like a response to an email, a post that I did, a text that I sent, or a thought that I had that I can't wait to put together. I mean, sometimes it's this podcast, like, oh, I haven't recorded one or posted one in a few days, or I know I have that one right there that I just need to fix up just a little bit, just give it a little bit of makeup and it'll be good to go. And then then that keeps me up until the middle of the night. I mean, I remember when I first got a real deal office job, sorting mail, the first few weeks, I was so excited about going into work, even though, you know, I was a mail clerk. I would have these dreams where I'd be laying in bed, but then I would be in the mailroom from bed, putting mail into the slots, and then sorting it out so I would have it ready first thing in the morning, you know, and then by the time I get to work, I didn't sleep enough because I didn't disconnect myself enough because I was too busy being in my head. That is that same experience happens now every time I'm in the middle of a conversation with somebody and then they don't respond till the next day. And I don't want to say, okay, wrap it up or respond to this. But I think I need to start teaching myself to not initiate a new conversation past 8 p.m., you know, because if I respond to anything or if I'm talking with someone and they don't conclude, because nobody says goodbye anymore. Nobody says, all right, the end. You know, that's the thing. I have friends who have different techniques like, oh, hey, I'm getting another call. Let me talk to you later. All right, cool, yeah, no worries, all right, and then that's it. When I hear no worries, I know that that's it. Gosh, I'm trying to think of one that happened recently. There's one that this one comedian, who I'll be respectful and not name names, keeps, you know, trying to reschedule, who will only be on the shows that I produce, you know, because it's stage time and there's usually some money involved or something. And they won't, I mean, that for that, they'll respond immediately. And, you know, right now during the quarantine, the world hasn't completely come to a halt, but things have cut back enough to where almost everybody that I know that is in the same sort of comedic community, it has an insane amount of free time. And this person's still giving me the same excuses for why they can't do my podcast. And it amuses me because it's almost always like, I just got hired to write on the show. I'm getting ready to do this big tour. So I have a lot of stuff on my mind. And in my head, I think to myself, well, I know that that's not true. I mean, if you're getting these opportunities, good for you. But I know based off of the amount of things that you're doing throughout the day or the things that you're posting, you're not as busy as that. You just, you don't want to be rude and say, no, thank you, I'm not interested in doing that. I mean, I've hit up, you know, Patton Oswalt and he responds with, I respectfully decline. That I respect that way more because it's not, there's no pussyfooting. There's no beating around the bush, giving me hopes, coming up with excuses. There's no, anything. It's just a flat out respectable no. And I get that. And I don't need that from everybody, but this is a good sort of education for yourselves. You know, how do you say no? What is your method? What are your tricks, your techniques? Some people, it's hard to just say the word no. It's not about declining. It's the actual word itself. Because it's not about letting somebody down. I mean, you'll say, yeah, I'll go to that party. Or yes, I put me down for two for your show, Jose. I can't wait to finally see you after all these times you've asked me. No, you just, you'll make these plans and then you won't show. You know, so it's not like you're incapable of declining an event. You just put off the part where you deny it, you know, and I think that you don't necessarily owe that to anybody, but you kind of owe it to yourself after a while. I used to be of the mindset where, you know, I didn't have to justify why I'm not going to attend something. And you don't really technically have to justify it. But I would think to myself, well, I don't really need to decline this invitation. You know, there are some people who are like, oh, I'm just trying to figure out how many drinks I need to get. I understand that. But really what it boils down to is the more you don't say no, the harder it is, it'll be to essentially do a lot of things, including saying yes sometimes. I mean, how often are you met with an opportunity that you genuinely want, but you can't accept? You know, the things that you kind of get scared of. It's a similar, not quite the same fear, but it is sort of a response that you're having where you're not allowing yourself to accept or decline. You know, you're conditioning yourself to not do one or the other. And that's hard. I know. I'm not the person who can have the serious conversations all the time. In fact, I'm usually the person that derails a serious conversation with a weird anecdote or a punchline or, you know, a punny style dad joke. That's me. But at the same time, if you want me to give you a straight response, I will. You know, I guess there is a part of me that tries not to be proud of it now, but there's this weird sort of, I noticed it it's almost like a thing where I roll my eyes when I hear other people say this, when other people go on about how crazy their family is, when other people go on about how tough they are or how much bullshit they don't take, or, you know, my family is really tough and we don't fuck around and we don't let anybody mess with us. And then you sort of see a few things that negate that contradict that statement. But you roll your eyes at it because you're like, no, you're not as tough as my family. You know, there's always a pride or a competition. There's always something along those lines. And I find myself doing that. I hear my family doing it, you know, but at the same time, we are very much like, oh, no, you don't want to fuck with us. And then we'll bring up an example from 20 something years ago, the last time we were really like, fuck you kind of responses, you know, and then it's not to say that we're different now, but we forget that, you know, there's a good chunk of time in which we allowed, you know, just the worst people to be around us because we didn't want to be rude and say no, you know, but we are so quick to forget those things. We're like, look, between the ages of, I was a pretty fucking tough person, therefore I'm always going to have this fuck you attitude. I mean, it is kind of, there are some very recent examples that came up where I had to have a very strict, tough love kind of conversation with more than one friend and relative. And I am trying to work on that. I'm trying not to be such a parental figure with my peers, but I can't help it. I sometimes I get too concerned about other people's finances because I was so worried about my own for so long that I want to make sure that no one else is dealing with this. But then I become the exact same thing that makes me roll my eyes when I get the same lecture or advice. It's inevitable. You you either die broke or live long enough to become the person that's annoying about money. I'm taking a Batman thing and I'm twisting it around and I'm making it my own. So that's on you if you don't like that. You know, I had to have a very, not serious, but serious-ish conversation with my niece. And it was, it was educational for me because I use, say, the kind of format that I do now where I give story-like examples. And I know that about myself, but there it almost always ties into what I'm trying to say. And I was trying to condition myself not to do that, but I can't help it. And that's one of those moments where it's like, okay, maybe I shouldn't be everyone's parent, but I can't help it and try to speak truthfully. I did, however, feel better about myself after I had to explain to her sort of the inner workings of how cults or, you know, certain people can operate, because there are people out there who are so good at being salesmen that they don't, you know, that they will say exactly what it is that you need to hear for you to be on board with them. In fact, here, let me read you something. This is, I had to send this to my niece when this guy was going on her Instagram Live about, this youth program or whatever that is educating, you know, saying things like, what's the word I'm looking for here? I know here, I'm going to find it over here. But they do this thing where they treat you like you need guidance. Here, let me give you guidance for the cost of whatever. And it's very sort of sneaky. But I was looking up information and I came across this article. And I'm going to read it to you the way that the person wrote it. It's called a Landmark, which, by the way, is a leadership program, or however you want to put it. I understand that there's programs you take and you pay a fee to learn certain things, but there are programs that I've seen like Landmark that are very manipulative, that where they will take somebody who is vulnerable, who is, best way I can put it is, someone who hasn't quite found themselves. They say, this is somebody we can mold. This is clay, fresh clay that I can shape. And so this one is written as if it's somebody who is reviewing a program as an outsider. But in reality, it's somebody from the inner workings who is creating their mistake was they wrote this article like the way they do their sales pitch. All right. So this is the actual thing. I'm gonna read it here, and I'm gonna try to read it the way that I feel like this is the way they wrote it. The all-famed Landmark educational cult question. So you have heard about the Landmark Forum, and you're curious to find out what it's all about. When you start to type it into Google, it autofills to Landmark Education Cult. Now, you're even more curious, a little worried, not to mention a small bit of skepticism has begun to creep in to add to what probably is already there. You click on the autofill that Google suggests of Landmark Education Cult, and here you are, ready to read. Exclamation point. And then it goes, look, ... You are certainly not alone in your skepticism and your curiosity. I was once invited to an intro to the Landmark Forum 5 states away by my crying mother, and the event was less than 24 hours away on a Tuesday night. Odd behavior, to say the least. I see the smile. I see the I overbleached my teeth smile when that line is delivered. I too used to Google to try to find out what this whole landmark was a thing was about, and what was met with some interesting stories and descriptions. So in this article, I'm going to cover everything you need to know about the Landmarks Forum, detailing my experiences, both good and bad, having been through two of the four landmark courses, and I'll explain to you where this strange stigma of landmark education being a cult comes from. And then it goes into how it's not a cult, the education, it talks about the cost of it, the different programs. And then it talks about the courses this person took with their wife, and that their parents have completed the curricular. Essentially, at this point, they've already let you know it's a family thing, which is how it kind of works. And then it says, let's get the FAQs out of the way. That's how it says it. How much is it? Price varies slightly from city to city, but the forum is $600. How long is it? 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday. That seems intense. It is. You think that changing the course of 100 to 200 people's lives in anything is anything but intense? Nope. It's heavy. It's intense. And it's incredible. Is it worth it? Hell yes. Not only that, they should charge more. Wait, it's really that impactful? Yes. This is how it's written. But I have a good life already. Of course you do. That's because you have a life. That in itself is amazing. Landmark teaches you how to live fully and powerfully. All right, so I'm gonna go ahead and wrap up right there. But that is, if you're listening to what I just said and you read that as like, oh, that sounds like a good program, all of the fucking no that I can muster right now. No. In fact, let's go back to the previous thing I was talking about. No. Dude, just fucking say it with me. No. Am I trying to be educational or am I trying to be one of these people? No. I know it sounds more and more like I'm trying to start my own cult, but I can assure you I have no interest in doing so. And nor should you really listen to me in like a you know, I'm not a guru. I'm not anybody. I'm still fucking trying to sort shit out myself. But I had this conversation with my niece, and I was talking about the different things that are happening in that people try to do to try to take advantage of you. And it happens all the time. I mean, shit, you get that with work. You get that shit with a relationship. There's always people around you that sort of influence you. I mean, this is, all right, I'm going to get a little heavy here. I'm going to get to the sort of, but really what's going on right now. If you're listening to this in as recent as it has come out, which is I'm currently recording this Thursday, May 28th, 11:29 p.m. And once again, yes, I don't think I'll be going to sleep early tonight. There's a lot going on around the world. In addition to the pandemics, the constant things that are going on in other countries as far as, you know, wars, attacks. I mean, I can't list it all. This is one of the harder parts. And no, nobody's being dismissive that there's still people in cages. My people are in cages. I'm not being dismissive of that. It's really sort of hard because I have been met with some criticism from people who think you have to choose one or the other. And yes, you can't technically fight on all fronts. You have to pick one if you're the kind of person that wants to fight or stand up or speak. You know, I'm not educated enough on anything to be able to be the anything more than possibly just a moral compass as far as, trying to respect people, but not as far as leading people in one direction or the other. But there's been a lot of violence against black people. And it's not anything new. And it's not that's not also happening to Hispanic people, to any sort of brown skin ethnic background. You know, it's happening everywhere. It's probably more, it's out there more. People are saying things that really just, you have to remember, these are things that were always happening. It's being documented now, and it's always been on some level, but now it's so easy to film it. I mean, think about the things that happen when you're not around. People start talking about the amount of domestic violence that's happening at home, which is fucking heartbreaking. But, you know, it's also happening outside of homes. Abuse and terrible things are happening everywhere. And really the way that people are acknowledging it in any way is when it's something you can see. This has kind of been going back to something I've talked about numerous times before, is there is a response that we have when think of somebody that reminds you of you, not their personality, but their aesthetic, maybe even their situation, but somebody who reminds you of yourself in a way to where you, when you see their pain, you connect with them just a little bit better because aesthetically they remind you of yourself or somebody you love, someone you care about. You're associating them with someone else whom you wouldn't want to see go through something similar, or rather who has gone through something similar, and you felt, you know, like you didn't do enough for them, and then there's this opportunity to do something for someone else. That's beautiful. But at the same time, there's people who will use that as and not look out for someone else because they are only looking out for their own, the people that they can connect with, the people who they say, you know what, you're my bloodline. You are, our ancestors suffered together, you know, not these other ones. I mean, I can say this much. I'm thankful that most of my family, I say most because I can't speak for everybody. Most of my family has a really good heart and is very accepting and loving of other ethnicities and cultures. I mean, I have an aunt whom I talked about on here who not only, you know, took in her brother's kids who were up for adoption and were going to be separated and kept them together, but took people in off the street and even supported and loved, you know, when my cousin, her nephew came out of the closet and, you know, had taken in a brother and sister who had just gotten here from Mexico, who were living on the streets, and accepted them and their, you know, and who they were. You know, there's beauty in that. Those are the kinds of things. Even my mom, even though it was a little misguided where my mom was convinced that I was gay, I at the same time love the fact that my mom was so supportive. And the reason she thought I was gay is because I had a cousin who I just talked about right now, who I was keeping a secret for him because he wasn't ready to come out yet. This was mid-90s. And my mom thought that, you know, she was hearing rumors. She thought it was about me. So she would constantly drop hints like, you know, being gay is okay kind of thing. And would say these things that would just be very out of nowhere and very amusing. But it really just came caught me by surprise. And, you know, I wasn't exactly a tough guy. I wasn't a tough kid, even though I wasn't one to be easily, God, I'm already doing the thing like where, you know, we're this tough. No, even though I wasn't a person who necessarily flinched or was scared of confrontation, I wasn't a one who was constantly seeking it. And whatever my mom's perspective or perception of machismo was or is, you know, I definitely wasn't living up to it. I was very much a kid's kid, you know, like I was proud of my love of the Power Rangers and love to draw and getting lost in my imagination. I mean, that's who I am now. And, you know, and so whatever the reason was, my mom was so quick to say, you know what, mijo, when you're ready, I'm ready. And beautiful, but very, very misguided. And I think it took her walking in on me with my girlfriend for her to be like, okay, maybe he prefers the company of women. And that was the end of that, I suppose. No, but it was very, you know, loving and accepting. And that is the world that I sort of grew up around. I mean, there are people in my family who are from different nationalities that I've married in. I mean, I'm half Mexican and half Salvadorian. The running joke is how much these two countries hate one another. Look up some history. There is some truth to the origin of the hatred of it. But it, you know, it's not like anybody who hates. If when Mexicans hate Salvadorians, they're not history buffs. They're just like, oh, you're kind of like me, but you're not like me. Right now, I'm not going to like you. But in the event that shit goes down, suddenly everybody's a brother. They're everybody's family, everyone's friends. These things that are happening right now need to be acknowledged in a way to where we have to speak for one another. Even if it's somebody who looks nothing like us, somebody who we can't connect to culturally. I mean, people say, oh, I grew up in a ghetto, so I can connect with black people. That's not necessarily true. I mean, I understand historically they were very much disadvantaged because of how their bloodline started here in this country. But that's not the same thing. You're combining two things. And even though statistically it's a good possibility in your neighborhood, it doesn't mean that that's the case. So, you know, first off, if you're not black, don't use the N-word. we've had this conversation on here numerous times. I think that, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be comedic right here, but it is something that is constantly being brought up with people who all have very specific, whether it's political leanings or certain preferences, they always end up on very opposing sides. I'm seeing less opposition and more union here. I mean, you can say what you want to say. I've whenever I see someone who is saying that Ahmaud Arbery or, you know, any of the recent victims, George Floyd or Breonna Taylor, if they, you know, none of those situations, the only thing that is common between them, the common thread is being black. Literally, I mean, they none of the three even remotely committed a crime. Yes, you could be like, oh, George Floyd had a fake $20 bill. Do you think he knew that? Do you think he didn't get that change somewhere else and wasn't aware of the fact that he was holding a $20 bill that he came into his possession and was unaware of? Even if there was malice of like, oh, I got to get rid of this thing. Hey, here, take this $20 or whatever. I'm not saying it's a good deed, and I'm not saying it's a great thing, but it's certainly not something you lose your life over. That was the actions of the four officers. It wasn't duty, it was hatred, and there's been violence and rioting, and go back to, well, I'm trying to remember the decade, the 90s, Rodney King, the riots that happened after Rodney King. You know, I was in LA, I was in California. I was a kid. I didn't know. Like, I remember when I was a kid, I was like, oh, I got to do something. I got to go there and I got to stop things. Cause I didn't understand why people were rioting. I didn't understand anything other than they were taking things that weren't theirs, you know? And I remember as a kid being like, I need to step up. I got to get on my scooter. I got to take the training wheels off of my bicycle so I can go faster. And I got to put a stop to this. You know, it's something that is always occurring. And I think that the problem is that you have to try every method to get your message across. And violence is not really the way that you want to initially go, but it seems to be the path that people eventually get to before a message is heard. The problem is that by the time that message is heard through violence, a new message is delivered and you create a whole new generation of hatred. And it's hard. It's hard to keep up. It's like two steps forward, three steps back. And it's not anybody's fault. Not everyone's on the same wavelength And yeah, when you gain some, you lose others, and that's always going to be the case. You're never going to have everyone 100% on your side. But if you're a person of influence, if you're a person who forget about, you know, getting reelected or keeping your position of power, eventually you need to come across a very moral dilemma of like, how can I help? What can I say right now? I mean, that the hesitation that certain community leaders have in saying something. I mean, there's people who will hesitate to speak their mind being against something. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. I mean, I have had friends whom, okay, this is going to get into very sort of the Facebook. That's just the way I'm going to do it. I'm not even gonna say social. I'm just going to say Facebook. The amount of people that I've said, you know, I've had to make the decision of, you know what? I may have known you from when I started comedy. You know, we may have hung out several times. We may have had very serious conversations, but I can't respectfully speak with you in the same level. And, you know, I can't talk with you ever again and have the same level of respect because of the comments you've made or because of the opinions you have. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion, and I can't stop you from having your opinion, but you have to acknowledge the fact that you're not making a decision here based off of anything other than, well, this is an inconvenience to me. This is, I mean, there was someone who was going on boldly saying, all of you are stupid for believing that this is a real situation, that the pandemic is real. Like, yes, people are getting sick and dying, but it's not worth shutting everything down. You guys are stupid and I'm thriving. And I promise you, this will be the last little chunk of all of that. But it's very upsetting because I was so sort of not initially black and white, but I didn't understand the gray areas. Where somebody can be your friend, but at the same time have very opposing views, or somebody could be your enemy and have so many things in common with you. You know, like, you never know that you're gonna get robbed by somebody, and then you're gonna feel sorry for them because they're in a position to where they had to take something from you. You know, you never know that you're gonna be at a park and you use the race car to try to get somebody, you know, you try to get somebody in trouble because you didn't know how to back up out of a situation, you know, or, you know, you couldn't admit to yourself where you were wrong. And then you have yourself a whole new situation. Suddenly you're the star of Twitter. Suddenly you're the center of attention for being another racist Karen. You know, these are all things that happen. I mean, there's these gray areas that I would say that I my grays are not the same as someone else's grays. And I'm not trying to defend anybody, but what I'm saying is that, you know, okay, how about this? Family who has very opposing views and you're never going to be on the same page, but you're still family. So on some level, you love each other. But I can say this confidently because I've done it. You can walk away from family and never talk to somebody again just because you're related. Just because you added somebody on Facebook, just because you guys were friends, and just because you had them as a guest on a podcast. You know, there are situations where you can just say, this isn't a friendship. This is more of a courtesy, you know. And then you can, it's really hard because you don't want to say, I'm going to keep only friends that are Democrats, or I'm only going to keep friends that are not racist, you know, because I can tell you this much. I've seen a lot of hypocrisy, a lot of people posting things about what's been going on and be like, say their names. But at the same time, I've heard them say some pretty fucked up things, and they think, oh, no, I see. I said those things in private. That's where it's okay to be racist. It's like, no, that's not how this works. If you're going to be, what's the word, ally? If you're going to be an ally, you got to always be an ally. It's not about, like, fighting the urge to say something racist. It just needs to be like, oh, just try not to have a racist thought. You know, like try, I mean, you don't, who are you doing that for? I don't know. It's like a comedy sketch. I saw this thing that I love that Patton Oswalt said recently, and it happens all the time. It happens to me all the time. Somebody will say something like, oh, this terrible thing happened. So how many jokes are you getting out of it? You know, how much material do you have now because of this presidency? Zero. I don't have any Trump-related jokes. I fucking loathe the guy. I can't fucking stand him. But honestly, he's not my comedy. He's not my material. I'm very self-deprecating. I like making fun of myself. I like making fun of my family. But really, I am my own target because that's what makes me laugh. You know, I don't, nobody wants to have a good chunk of, like a good new 10, 20 minutes of how stupid Trump is or their, a new impersonation, because there is no new impersonation. Anybody can do a fucking Trump impersonation. Not everyone can do it well, but everyone can do it just enough. I mean, I've seen somebody who dedicated their whole social media to doing a Trump impersonation that's not needed, you know, but at the same time, it's everybody has their own outlets. Everyone needs to be creative on some level. So I don't want to completely knock it, but I'm saying is that nobody says, oh man, I really love the fact that I have this material. And yeah, I've found ways to make comedy out of tragedy, you know, out of personal experiences, but it's not like I wanted those experiences so I can have those fucking jokes. You know, it's never really about that. It's a good coping mechanism, but it's not fucking necessary. And stop recommending jokes to me, please. I had somebody recently send me a meme and said, you should use this on stage. I was like, how do I use a meme on stage? You're like, just say what it says on there, but say it on stage. I'm like, that's not how it works. I got to come up with my own shit. There's a good chance that it's going to sound like something else. Going back to the episode I did with Carlos Santos about parallel thinking. But the goal is not to start off with taking something that someone else is saying. It's about finding your own fucking voice, finding your own humor, finding your own creative take on whatever it is you want to talk about. You know, it's very amusing, but fucking stop it, please. No, I will not be using your shit on stage. Stop that now. Let's take a look here. I think I'm about ready to, So I finally spoke with Ariel, my occasional co-host here on the podcast. We text, we send each other memes or GIFs or whatever. But because of this whole thing, we haven't really spent time together. We've talked on the phone, we recorded an episode, but the quality on her end needed some help. So we had to wait till she had some equipment to record a good thing or have good audio quality. So we'll be having another episode real soon. But I had asked her right at the sort of start of the pandemic, because she's been making masks at home, but getting a restock for the stuff that she needs has been taking a while. And I've been having this issue where my head is a little bigger than most people. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing because I'm 5'8". I think that if my head was normal sized, I'd be closer to 5'7", maybe 5'6.5". And I have a bobblehead. I think that if I had slept well enough growing up, I could have easily been a good 6 feet. You know, it's really kind of funny and embarrassing, but also at the same time, because I have a lot of weight around my body, it makes sense together. But if I ever lost the weight, I would become a popsicle or a lollipop rather. And Ariel, you know, I hit her up for her masks, and I told her, you know, I need something that's just a little bit bigger than average. And she knows the size of my head. She's been here with me. She was very much aware of that fact. And in fact, I posted a photo of how it's like if I wore a mask, but it was just covering a third of my cheeks and most of my lips and some of my nose. I mean, it was super tiny on me. It looked like I was playing some kind of cartoon sketch. That's how small it was. It looked like I took a child's mask and taped it onto the sides of my face. It wasn't a very protective mask. So she sends me a message saying, like, hey, do you still need a mask? Because I'm making an extra large mask. I mean, I think I asked for a large, not an extra large. But she's like, yeah, I had to cut a lot of fabric for this and just sent me a photo of it. And oh my God, it looks so good. That looks so good. Thanks. All right, there you go. It actually matches these new shorts that I just got. Oh man, I'm so glad, because I need more masks when the world starts back up and I have to go out every day and I no longer have an excuse to not go out. I'm gonna need more masks, mostly because it makes me look better. I think I look prettier, because really the part that stands out about my face are my eyes. They're so inviting. Now if you could just have my eyes and then my voice, you know, that's all you need. That's all you really need. I got a compliment recently that says, you have a very relaxing radio voice. And I said, thank you. And then they said, it doesn't match your face. And then I said, go fuck yourself. And then she said, don't talk to me that way. I'm your mom. No, that that didn't happen. I did have a guest on here, though, who told me that my voice doesn't match my face, which was a really just fucking positive backhanded compliment. And it's super fucking amusing still. But it was so funny that she did not know that she was being insulting. And I was like, oh, well, nice to meet you, too. My name is Jose. I'm the guy you just offended a little bit. I think if I was a more sensitive person, I would have taken actual offense to it. But that was amusing. Do I have anything else to talk about? Oh, yeah. Apparently, I'm too much of a fan. I'm getting ready to do another few episodes with some guests that I've lined up that have a few shows coming out that they're going to be promoting. And first of all, before I forget, Jesus Trejo, this comedian, he was on a recent episode and he was talking about how he's going to have himself a special coming out. It's actually coming out Friday. So when this episode comes out, it's going to be tonight. Tonight or tomorrow, or depending on what time you download it, Jesus Trejo is going to have the premiere of his comedy special on Showtime. So it's going to be on Showtime. It's Friday, May 29th, 9 p.m. You know, you can listen to it. You can watch it. He's mentioned that it'll be available on several platforms. It's called Stay at Home Son. And it is premiering on Showtime, so check it out. If you don't have Showtime, take somebody else's login, or in about a week, you'll be able to get it off of, I believe, iTunes. You can buy it or rent it on there. I believe it's going to be on Amazon Prime as well. Go to his Instagram, at JesusTrejo1, and you'll be able to get more information on there to, you know, where you can find it, where you can watch it, if you don't have Showtime itself. So I'm very excited about that. That reminds me of something that I've recently been I've been reflecting on this, because I'm not a person who considers myself to be a fanatic. Even with all the stuff that I collect, I still don't think I'm a big comic book fan, because I don't read all the comic books. Yes, I get them. I probably buy, you know, 2 to 3 issues a month, which isn't that much. I think because I always sort of compare myself to how fanatic other people can be, that I'm very dismissive of, like, oh, I'm not that bad, I'm not at that level, you know, so I dial it back. But even with comedians, with people that that I'm friends with or I've gotten to know, there's a thing that people try to do where they, you know, they act cool. They're like, all right, you got to act like these are your peers, you got to be on their level. You can't be too much of a fan. In fact, I hear this from several different comedians who have done the same thing, where they were met with an opportunity to meet somebody that they admired, and they never want them to be a fan. They never want them to be like that. They just want them to be normal and hang out and chat, and they don't want to be, you know, like, oh my God, this is my moment to talk to you. I mean, as respectful as they can be, there is sort of this thing where you can't do that. And I'm recently learning that I need to control that within myself. I'm not the kind of person that gets super excited and runs around and jumps up and down when I see somebody. But, you know, there is a thing that happens where I start realizing, like, oh, I am being a fanboy right now. I'm not being a comedic colleague. I'm being somebody who is just geeking out about how I'm currently working with this great comedian that I admire, or that I used to watch, or that, you know, whatever the case is. When I was being told this, I realized that, oh, this is kind of how some people are perceiving me right now, because they're seeing me as a fanatic, as a fanboy. And that's amusing to me, because I don't really consider myself to be one. But I got the lesson that's behind it. I understand what they were saying. What they're saying is, you know, behave like you belong. You know, it's great that you're excited to be there, but try to be cool. Try to be not the person that they want to call security on. And, you know, like, oh, this guy's being a little too excited to meet me. I don't think I'm quite to that level, but there is sort of a response that I've seen where I'm like, oh, you don't like people being like super fanboy around you too much. So I'm like, I get that. I respect it. I'm going to go ahead and just take this general enthusiasm, put it in my back pocket and act like, you know, I don't give a shit that you're here. So fuck you. Whatever, you're here. All right, cool. Whatever. So again, I understand it, but it is very sort of frustrating, because now I gotta act like I don't respect what you do. And it was a humbling's the wrong word, but it was a good lesson of like, oh, okay. So I gotta treat it a little bit more like I don't give a shit, and I'm here to just do what you're doing, and we're on the same page, apparently, you know. And it's this lesson comes a little bit late, but at the same time, I understand it even more now, because I realize this is what's happening. I'm aspiring towards being something more than I currently am. I'm trying to be a better version of myself, not just as a person, but as a comedian. And fuck yeah, I should be a little more, not necessarily calmer, but, you know, I should be a little more, I should present myself better. How's that? How does that sound? I should present myself like somebody who is excited, not excited to be there, but excited to get on stage. Somebody who's been on stage already, you know, act like somebody who, like, oh, this is just Tuesday to me. This isn't me getting up on one of the stages that I've daydreamed about getting on someday. This is me just doing my thing. And I'm learning that's how people want you to go about it. But it was a lesson that got to me a little bit late. But any hoozle. That's the end of that. I just kind of wanted to put that out there towards the end, because I think that this is probably going to be a lesson that can be applied to a lot of you. Is do more to, I'm not saying do more to belong. That's a terrible fucking lesson. But, you know, if you want to be a part of a certain community, if you want to be part of something that you're, you know, working towards, that you're trying to be more of and trying to get to the same level as others that you respect, you do have to change. You do have to sort of evolve yourself a little bit and modify yourself just a smidge, just a skosh, you know, just become more of that thing that, that you want to be in. And it's, some people around you, they're going to respond to you or react to you a lot better. And that took me a minute to learn. And I think I'm still in the minute, in the middle of learning it, but it is something that is a good education that that I've finally gotten. So I can't fuck around. You know, I gotta take myself more seriously, and I gotta act more like I belong in a certain environment or whatever. So you do that too. I think that lesson was more for me than for you, but it trust me, if you want to belong in a different office culture, if you want to belong in a certain environment that you feel like you're not currently a part of, I'm not saying you got to play some fucking game, but you got to tell yourself, like, look, I fucking deserve to be here. You know, I deserve to be here as much as you do, motherfucker. So dial the fuck back. I'm here to party with you. I'm here to be one of the fucking big boys or girls. Not big. I mean, you lost weight. You look fucking great. God, what's your secret? Tell me. You know, but you get what I'm fucking saying. You guys know what I'm talking about at this point. You know what I mean. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. If you could do me a favor and not be racist, that'd be fucking great. You know, it's each their own, but ideally not being racist would probably be, you know, I would probably respect you just a little bit more if you didn't lead with like, I'm going to be a little less racist today. You know, I mean, that's a fucking start. How about that? Just don't, you know, if you can't switch it off completely, then at the very least kind of just be like, well, you know what? I'll start small. I'll start by not making those jokes. Like, do you remember the joke about the bus full of, oh no, I shouldn't say that joke. Like that kind of shit. Like, just, you know, it start being not racist in private and go from there. I think that's probably some of the better advice that I can give right now, because I'm not the person to go to for this shit, but that's my little gift to you. That's my little nugget of wisdom. Take it with you. I'm going to post several episodes in the coming weeks because I have no excuse not to. And also because I actually have guests that I'm super excited about. I mean, that's not to say that I'm not excited about the guests I've already had, but you get what I'm saying. Oh my God, look at that. I'm making things awkward again. That's the name of the show, you guys. Take it easy. Take care. Keep life awkward. Fucking have fun, draw some pictures, call a friend, I don't know, have a shot of whiskey on my behalf. Unless you're sober, in that case, have a shot of cocaine. Unless you're diabetic, have a shot of water for me. Unless you're, you know, a gremlin. take care.